Hello and welcome in.
First Science.
Because he shows them the magic and mystery of science in everyday living.
On Science Mixtape on Soho Radio. Oh, well, good morning. You're listening to Science Mixtape with me, Matilda Hay, and this week we're taking a sensory exploration through the world of synesthesia, a phenomenon where two or more of your senses are coupled so that when one is stimulated, it also triggers the other. So while it's true that most of you are listening to Science Mixtape, some of you might also be seeing it or tasting what I say. Roughly 4% of people have some form of synesthesia, and joining me today is one of those people. Yes, I'd like to welcome to the show Dr. Claire Jonas from the University of East London, who not only has synesthesia herself, but also studies it as part of her research. Good morning, Claire.
Hi.
How are you today?
I'm very well, thanks. It's nice to be here.
It's lovely to have you. Now, I'm sure that all our listeners are dying to know, what form of synesthesia do you have? Tell us about your experience.
The main kind of synesthesia I have is that when I listen to music, I see shapes or sometimes I feel them. I also have a couple of other kinds that are less exciting. So some tastes have shapes and also numbers, letters of the alphabet, anything that's in a sequence exists in space in front of me.
Wow. Okay, so you hear music and you see it as a shape.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like in front of you, or like you actually see it as like a solid object?
Something in between seeing it and feeling it. So I was just trying to describe it to someone. It's almost like knowing where your hands are when you're not looking at them. It's the same kind of sensation, like the music goes in that particular space, even if you can't see it.
Great. Well, I can't wait to hear what you're sensing or seeing for all the songs you've chosen today. Now, our experiment for anyone who wants to take part at home, all you're going to need is a group of friends and the ability to count to 10. And we've got producer Yaz behind the desk today. How are you, Yaz?
Hello, I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I believe you have a brain teaser for us.
I do. So today's brain teaser, listen carefully, and if you think you know it, do tweet us in to Soho Radio or Science Mixtape. So here it is. Take away my first letter and I still sound the same. Take away my last letter, I still sound the same. Take away my middle letter, I will still sound the same. I'm a five-letter word. What am I?
I literally have no idea.
Nope, me either.
Okay, we've got the whole show to think about it.
I'm not enjoying this power position reverse. Normally, I'm the one that does the brain teaser, and I sit there all smug, being like, I know the answer.
And how times change.
Well, let's go straight to your first song, Claire. What have you chosen and why?
I have chosen A World Alone by Lorde because she's a synesthete.
Is she?
Yeah, she is.
What kind of synesthesia does she have?
I think she actually sees colours when she listens to her own music, which is pretty cool.
Winner of the 1965 Nobel Prize in Physics, Richard Feynman, experienced letters and words as having colours.
It's producer Yaz bringing us one of many facts today about famous people who have synesthesia as well. So seeing letters as having colours, that's one of the most common types, isn't it?
Yeah, that's really common. We think that's maybe about 4% of people have that. And it can be really useful. So, for example, if you're trying to learn to spell, you can figure out if the letters in a word are in the right order because the colours are in the right order as well as the sort of shapes of the letter. So it's like having an extra jog for your memory.
But I have read that there's like 54 different types of synesthesia. So what are all the other types that you hear, you see shapes when you hear music?
Yeah.
And like Lorde, some people might see colour when they hear music.
Yep.
Or like Richard Feynman, see colours in the letters and the words. What else is there?
Oh gosh, there are so many. So there's lexical gustatory synesthesia, where you might taste words that you're saying or other people are saying. Ordinal linguistic personification, or OLP we normally call it because that's quite a mouthful, where letters or numbers might seem to take on genders or personalities. Mirror touch, where you feel someone else being touched on your own body. Gosh, there are so many.
And do they all share like as similar properties, or is it really quite wide ranging?
It's really wide ranging. So recently we've been starting to think about whether it's useful to talk about synesthesia as kind of one group of things, or whether they're actually quite separate. So some of them, quite a lot of them, involve linguistic stimuli, so letters, numbers, words, things like that. But then there's this group of other types of synesthesia that don't seem to work in the same way. So the mirror touch that I was just mentioning, like, that doesn't seem to be the same kind of neural basis as the rest of them.
And when did you realise that you were a synesthete? I mean, did you find out quite early on that the way you experienced the world was different from other people? Or?
It actually took quite a long time. I think what happened, it's a very fuzzy memory. I think I was watching a documentary with my parents about synesthesia, and they put up a picture of someone else's numbers, how they're mapped onto space. And I looked at it and I went, that's not right. That's not how numbers go. And suddenly went, oh. But I've been discovering new kinds of synesthesia every now and then since then. So the taste to sort of shape synesthesia that I mentioned earlier, I've only really realised that in the last couple of months that that's a thing.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So you're still discovering new things about yourself.
Yeah.
And can we unpack that? So you said you see numbers in space.
Yep.
What do you see?
Gosh, it's quite hard to explain. So if this would be so much more useful if I could just gesture and then people could see it. Basically, zero is on the lower right-hand side, about level with my shoulder, and then numbers up to about 10 slope up towards my left, and it's about by my left ear, but a bit further forward. And then the number line reverses there, and all of the other numbers sort of shoot off up and to the right to infinity.
Kind of like a sort of, not zigzag, but like, yeah.
Yeah, it's like a line with a hook at one end, I guess.
And how did that work when you did like maths at school? I mean, did you find that you were just looking at your number line?
Yep. It was actually really unhelpful. So I'm not bad at maths, as you might imagine. I have to do maths quite a lot as a scientist. But when I was in school, I didn't know that the way I did maths was going to be unhelpful to me. So if you imagine, I don't know, adding up 53 and 207, what that would look like for most people, I think, is you might do a sort of mental calculation in your head, like where you picture the sum as it would be written down. What I do instead is sort of like counting along a tape measure. So I'd go, okay, well, 53 plus 7, that makes 60, and I'd leap along to 60 on the number line. And then I go, okay, plus 200, so that's 260. And that's a reasonably easy sum. But if you get to more complex sums, or ones that don't like end in a round figure, then I start making mistakes. So I might end up saying, oh, that's 263 instead of 262. And of course, if you make that mistake early on, yeah.
Chunks of space, aren't they?
It's like, yeah.
Oh, I'm going to cut a bit of my cake.
Yep.
And you're like, oh, I might have cut it like slightly more angles than I meant.
Yep, exactly.
But it's roughly still like a quarter, yeah.
Yeah, which is, it's fine when it's cake, but not so fine when you're trying to do GCSE maths.
And when you say that you see your shapes in music, what was Lord? What was that song that we just played? What did you see?
It's very smooth. It sort of looks like a river with pebbles in it. I'm not sure which bit is Lord's voice and which bit is the rest of the music. I think her voice might be pebbles. I typically like singers whose voices look like pebbles.
That's so cool. What does it mean if you go to a gig or a music festival? How is that experience for you?
I can sort of tune into it or ignore it. So if there's something like interesting going on in terms of the lighting, I can sort of pay attention to that instead. But quite often there's a bit in the back of my head that's going, oh, that matches up with my synesthesia at the moment. Or like, no, that's completely the wrong lighting selection. What are you doing?
Oh, so it's like interfering. And
yeah,
like,
a little
this
bit.
This is not how I see it.
Yeah. But I mean, I can go and stand at the back where it's less crowded and shut my eyes and just, yeah, see all of the music,
so
which makes it pretty entertaining.
Show.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's, wow, I'm kind of jealous.
It's pretty cool, I'm not going to lie.
So I've been working on a documentary all about babies, and I came across some research that said there's a theory that all of us start out as babies as having synesthesia, because it takes a long time for the kind of neurons in our brain to become compartmentalized, and yep. one sense to start with will stimulate all of them.
Yep. So that's the neonatal synesthesia hypothesis. That's its formal name. We don't actually know if it's true or not. As you can imagine, it's quite difficult to test if a baby is a synesthete yeah. or not. But it's quite likely. So if not that all babies are synesthetes, certainly that they find it difficult to tell the difference between the senses. So like a loud noise and a bright light, they're both like a lot of energy coming in.
Stimulation, yeah.
Yeah. So you may not as a baby necessarily be able to figure out which is which. And it's only later when you start communicating about your senses to other people that you realise, people draw this distinction between noises and lights. I can do the same.
Right. Yeah. So why do we think that some people maintain that synesthesia and others don't?
Well, there's probably what's going on is that there are kind of evolutionary advantages to synesthesia. So, for example, you tend to have a better memory if you're a synesthete. So if you imagine you can't remember someone's name, but you know what colour their name is, that might allow you to narrow down what letter it begins with. So you can be like, okay, it's a green name. So that means it must begin with S or G. So she's probably called Sarah or like Gertrude or something. And Sarah seems like a more common name. So you can imagine you narrow it down. So there's that. Synesthetes are more creative than other people.
So they think that there must have been sort of an evolutionary, there's a genetic yeah. element essentially, maybe.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, synesthesia does have some disadvantages that go with it, so as we were just saying, I'm not necessarily that good at maths compared to other people, and it maybe also has some there may be immune disorders that go along with it, so we're still sort of testing that.
I'm going to stop you there. I want to ask you more about that properly, but we have to get in the songs as well. So okay. What's your next song and why?
I have picked Gosh by Jamie XX because the album, all of the songs have different colours that he picked to go with them. And I've no idea if he's a synesthete. I'd love to ask him, but I think it's really cool that he's done that.
All it down. Oh, gosh. Oh, my gosh.
Rapper, record producer, director and fashion designer Kanye West sees sound as colour. Many other musicians experience this too, including Mary J. Blige, Charlie XCX and Pharrell Williams.
Apparently, Pharrell Williams sees happy as yellow with accents of mustard and sherbet orange.
Ooh, nice.
Sherbet yeah. orange. It seems like quite a lot of artists or musicians are synesthetic.
Yeah, it does seem that way, doesn't it? I think it can be really helpful if you're making music, of course, if you kind of like know you've got it right because you've the song's an appropriate colour or like it makes a nice shape or something like that. I sing for pleasure sometimes and I know when I'm making the right note because it's the right kind of shape.
Oh my god, that's so cool.
It's pretty useful.
Can I ask, what did you see in that song that we just had in Jamie XX?
That's much more elaborate than the Lord song that we had earlier. So it's kind of, it looks like great big metallic building blocks that are kind of slamming down on each other. That's the like dung of the bass, and then the synth in the background is kind of like ribbons. It's weird. It's two very yeah. like different
blocks and
bits.
Ribbons.
Yeah.
Are they in colour?
The blocks are sort of dull silver. The ribbons, no, they're just kind of like bright, I guess. They don't seem to have a colour.
Now, we've got a few more people in the studio with us, because I did say we needed a group for this one. So I'd like to introduce Sophie Boyd.
Hello.
And Max Gray.
Hello.
Thank you for joining us in the studio. And anyone listening at home, now's your chance to get involved as well. So what I'm going to ask you all to do, this is all about perceptions. I literally just want us all to sit here and in our heads, count to 10. Okay? Tell me when you're done. Go.
Done.
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 Great. And you at home, you will obviously know how fast you counted to 10. Now, that is the first difference. When you say count to 10, it seems like we're all going to be doing the same thing. But straight away, people counted at different speeds. Max, you were super fast there. Now, did anybody see the numbers as they were counting?
I did.
Yeah.
Of course. It's my synesthesia.
Yeah, I did too.
How did you see them? Did they like appear and disappear? Did they swipe past? Were they all there at once?
No, appear and disappear.
And did they have a colour?
Black.
Okay. Anybody else?
Yeah, I see them in my head as well when I'm counting. Yeah, but they appear and disappear, but white.
And do they scroll or is it like a pop, pop? Great. So I don't see anything in my head when I count. And Max, you're shaking your head, so I'm guessing you don't either.
Nope.
Did anybody hear a voice?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, me too.
Yes.
So yeah. Everybody had a voice. Was it your own voice?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, some people might not hear a voice or might not hear their own voice, which is interesting. I hear my voice as well. And then the third question is, did anybody tap or like move any part of their body as they were counting?
I think I kind of moved my eyes, if that makes sense. I'm sort of like looking up and moving my eyes from side to side.
Yeah, I'm doing the same thing.
So what I do is I will like tap my tongue on my teeth or tap my finger on my leg, like really minimal. I barely realize I'm doing it, or like jog my foot up and down. But I am kind of using it as a rhythm with my counting, and I count quite almost like in seconds. And I just think that's a really cool thing. You could do it with any group of friends, and it just shows how we all have our own ways of seeing the world and our own kind of things going on our head and our own perceptions of something as simple as counting. And I think, so you study synesthesia, don't you?
I do.
This is like the crux of it. Like the way that we all perceive the world is so different. Like, how do we know that if I say red and you say red, we're all seeing the same thing?
That is a really difficult philosophical question. You can sort of approach it, so you can make analogies across the senses. So, you know, is red more hot or cold, for example, would be a useful kind of question to ask. But yeah, really, you can't ever know.
And how do you, like, have you ever come across someone who doesn't understand or can't understand your experience?
Not personally, but I have heard stories from other synesthetes, like, the saddest thing was probably someone being misdiagnosed as having a mental illness because they talked about their synesthesia to a therapist, and the therapist hadn't heard of synesthesia and thought that they were hallucinating, which is, you know, one of the hallmarks of schizophrenia. So, yeah, it can go a bit wrong when you try and describe it to other people. But largely, now that synesthesia is more widely known about, it generally tends to go okay.
And for anyone listening, the difference between synesthesia and hallucinations, as I understand it, synesthesia is it's when you're conscious, so it's not when you're like asleep and dreaming.
Yeah.
And it's consistent and automatic, like you don't think about it, it's just there, just the way you open your eyes and you see the world.
Yep. And also you're aware that it's not real, if that makes sense, or you're aware that it's like a sensory difference from other people, whereas hallucinations, you can't distinguish between the hallucination and reality.
Right. And you told me that when you try and explain your version to children, how do you do that?
I actually get them to listen to a song with me, and then I will draw what I experience during the song, and I'll get them to draw it as well. So it's a lot of fun.
Great. So I think this should be our bonus experiment. Okay. So for your next song, everyone here in the studio, we're going to try and draw what we hear in the song. And we'll tweet a picture of it afterwards. And listeners at home as well, like, think, what do you see? What would you draw in this next song? Claire, can you introduce it for us? What are we going to be listening to?
It is Nest by Young Fathers.
And why have you chosen this one?
It makes a really nice shape when I try to draw it.
Okay. Challenge is on.
Baby, 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 been all around. Baby, baby, hey! Taste of pleasure. Something from nothing, made it into something for someone. You held me well, I hold you well. You give me one all day, pushing through the storm, I got you.
Lexical gustatory synesthesia is a rare form of synesthesia in which spoken and written language, as well as some colours and emotions, cause individuals to experience an automatic and highly consistent taste or smell.
This is my favourite type of synesthesia. Like, I just think it sounds amazing. I read about someone who Anne Boleyn always sounded like a pear drop.
Oh, nice.
And his school friends would be sliced potatoes and strawberry jam, apparently.
Oh, lovely. I have a friend who experiences this kind of synesthesia, and people quite often, when they find out, ask him what the names taste like. And
yeah, I'd probably do that.
Yeah. I'm keeping this anonymous because I don't want to give it away. But if their name tastes horrible, then he's just like, oh no, it tastes like apricots.
I wonder if people start being like, he never says my name. Maybe it's because he hates the taste. Or when he likes taste, maybe he's just like, how are you doing, Claire? Claire, yeah. Like, are you hungry today? So we have all drawn our pictures, and looking around the room, there's some quite different ones. Yaz, can you describe yours to the listeners?
Yeah, well, this is kind of hard to do because I don't experience it in the same way that you do, Claire. So I guess I just try to take a stab at it, and sort of fluffy swirls is the closest I can probably come up with.
That's actually not far from me.
Yeah, looking around, everyone's done bananas different things.
Yeah, I guess mine looks more like a very gentle round tornado that's kind of flat at the bottom and has like some weird stuff going on
in
the middle.
It looks like a kind of soft ball made of spirals of wool or something.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it feels like.
Sophie, what have you drawn?
I've done quite a sort of starburst shape with a giant hay in the middle.
Yeah, it looks like one of those kind of like boom or whack kind of cartoon, like spiky bubble things with the big word in it.
Yeah.
Ah, I love it. And Max?
I went for something that I guess looks a little bit more like a musical score if it was made out of doodles.
That
kind of did a bit at the top that represented the treble and a bit at the bottom that was the bass. But I had to think about it a lot to try and kind of rationalise why it looked that way.
So mine is kind of similar to yours, and I think also inspired by what you've been saying, Claire. Mm. Like, normally I'm quite a literal person, and I would probably have drawn a baby because they say baby a lot. But I was trying to be like, listen to the music and what does it make me think and see. So I've got kind of like some low bulbous feet or giant notes, I don't know, and that's the beat.
Yep.
And like some higher triangular things that were like the clapping, and then like a kind of stream that's like the woo. But I also found that as I was drawing it, what I wanted to draw kept changing, so then I put a swirl on top of it. But you're kind of similar to you, I like laid it out in space. There we go. If anyone has done it at home and wants to share, please tweet us a picture. Now Claire, you were talking earlier about the sort of pros and cons of having synesthesia, and this is what you've been studying, isn't it?
It is, yeah. So last year I was looking at whether migraine is more common in people with synesthesia, and what we found out is that, well, not migraine exactly, but visual disturbances and headaches. So like, migraine isn't just having the aura before the headache, or scotoma, which is the sort of patch of weird fuzzy stuff in your eye that like gives you a warning that you're having a migraine.
Yes, I get it, when it's just like that visual disturbance.
Yep. But there's also other things that go along with it, like nausea and phonophobia, so like not liking loud noises, and like you might want to hide away from the light and that kind of stuff. So what we found is that people don't necessarily have migraine any more commonly if they're a synesthete, but they do have visual disturbances, so like maybe the aura but without the rest of the symptoms of migraine, as it were. That's one possible disadvantage. Other people have been looking at lots of different things. So we know that irritable bowel syndrome, of all things, is more common in synesthetes than in non-synesthetes. Not sure why. Possibly multiple sclerosis is more common in synesthetes than non-synesthetes. So obviously quite a serious condition. So it might be, you might be sitting there going like, what have all those things got in common? They're probably all immune linked. So one of the theories that we have about synesthesia is that the genes that underlie it are somehow overlapping with the genes that deal with the immune system. So if your immune genes lead you towards migraine or irritable bowel syndrome or multiple sclerosis, they might also lead you towards synesthesia. And you can imagine, again, like in an evolutionary sense, those two might balance each other out because of the advantages that go along with synesthesia.
Absolutely. Do you feel like, is there anything about your synesthesia that you don't like?
it can be distracting occasionally. So I don't drive anymore, but when I used to, I would have to turn down the radio if I was doing like a complicated bit of driving, because otherwise all of the synesthesia would get in the way of me doing things. And this isn't uncommon that synesthetes report feeling a bit overwhelmed by the synesthesia. So actually, I was just thinking this as I walked here this morning. I came through Piccadilly Circus and I remembered that there's a synesthete who she can't go there because she has sound to colour synesthesia and colour to sound synesthesia. So when Piccadilly Circus is in full like flashing advert mode, it's just unbearable for her.
Whoa. So yeah. Gosh, that's so confusing. Colour to sound and sound to colour.
Yeah, just like feeding round in a big loop.
So the light display at a festival is really not good for her.
No, I can imagine she would not enjoy that.
But you were saying before that there's lots of advantages as well, yeah, in kind of terms of memory and creativity. And as we've seen from our facts, like a lot of people who are creative, like artists and musicians, seem to have had synesthesia.
Yeah, it's true. So yeah, this increased creativity is something that we see. It tends to be increased convergent creativity. So you can divide creativity into roughly sort of two groups. So there's divergent, which is making something new that like no one's ever done before. And then there's convergent, which is bringing together like disparate elements. So like, for example, creating a new recipe would be a convergent creativity. So synesthetes tend to be very good at that kind of creativity, which sort of makes sense because their senses are working to sort of bring disparate things together.
Yeah.
There are other advantages of synesthesia as well. So, for example, I'm very good at putting IKEA furniture together because synesthetes tend to have better mental imagery than other people. So I can easily picture the finished product and sort of get myself to that point. And it always used to confuse me that other people didn't enjoy putting furniture together because I was just like, it's really easy. What's wrong with you? There was nothing wrong with them. It was me.
We put out a tweet and a sort of Facebook message earlier this week asking people to write in if they had a form of synesthesia, and someone called Stacey Charette, hello Stacey if you're listening, wrote in to say that she has something similar to you actually, Claire, spatial sequence number form, so where she sees numbers in space.
Mm-hmm.
And she says that this seems to have given her an eidetic memory,
yep,
which is, for anyone that doesn't know, I didn't, it's similar to having like a photographic memory, like you have a near perfect memory of things, yep, but you don't get any of that mental image, you just have a really good memory.
Yeah.
And that seems like an incredible advantage.
Yeah, it's pretty useful. The memory advantages of synesthesia, I mean, people have found different sort of levels of them. Sometimes it's just like, you know, you've got a bit of a memory advantage, and sometimes it's you get sort of extraordinary things. Like there's a guy who has both synesthesia and Asperger's, and he has memorized pi to something like 22,000 digits. So using
22,000.
Like, yeah.
Oh my God.
It's incredible.
Can people train themselves to become synesthetic?
Possibly, yes. So don't try drugs at home, kids, but that's how people traditionally used to see if they could experience synesthesia, because obviously synesthesia sounds quite
from
a lot like
hallucinogenic drugs. Yeah,
yeah,
like
exactly.
LSD trip or something.
More boringly, you can train yourself into having synesthesia. So there's a few people who've been doing experiments on how that might work, and it unfortunately is very boring. Basically, you sit there, you look at a number, and you know the number color associations that you're supposed to be forming, and then you go, this number is the right color or this number is the wrong color. So if you know 7 is supposed to be yellow, you sit there and go, yes, that's a yellow 7, no, that's a red 7, and you do that again and again and again.
So it's just a really kind of strong form of association.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. I mean, people have tried more sort of passive methods, but they do work, but they don't seem to form such strong associations. So something like a browser plugin that would turn certain letters certain colors, so you just kind of like passively pick up the E is always green, and you do see some of the advantages of synesthesia. So people have tested memory after that and it looks like it's improving, but this is something that's still in the very early stages of research, so we don't know what else is going on.
Interesting. I saw a study that came out a couple of years ago that said there seems to be some element of experience in the kind of synesthesia you might involve, maybe just for some forms, but that it was only a small group, only 11 people they tested, but they all associated colours and letters, and they were very similar to the colours that the famous Fisher-Price fridge magnet alphabet set used.
Yep. So we call these people fridge magnets in the seats, as you might imagine. So you can pick up colours from a lot of different things. So, fridge magnets are an obvious one. Alphabet books are quite common as well, because you usually have, like, A is for apple, B is for ball. So you might start picking up, like, oh, well, A is for apple, therefore...
it's green.
Yeah, or red sometimes. Depends on the apple, I suppose. So, yeah, those synesthetes, they're quite uncommon. Like, most people, we can't actually unpick where their associations come from, except in a very sort of general sense. So, like, B might be blue or brown, because those are the...
BB.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, begin with the same letter.
But otherwise, it's a little bit of a mystery why people have the things that they do.
Fascinating. What is your fourth song, and why?
I have picked Disparate by 410 Champion. So this is actually nothing to do with my synesthesia. This is just something that made me laugh about a week ago. My research intern came in to see me, and she happened to notice that I was listening to Progressive House. And she looked at me and she went, do you like Progressive House? And I went, yeah, you know, sometimes I go to all-night raves. And she's just like, but how old are you? So I'm 34. Go away. But I think I quite like that people don't necessarily know that I go out to raves from looking at me. Like, academics are people too, I think, is the message that I wanted to send with this one.
The Russian writer Vladimir Nabokov perceived letters and words as different colours and textures. Interestingly, the letters of different languages had different textures for him. So, for example, an English A and a French A were different.
News just in. American national parks defy President Trump on Twitter with tweets about climate change and global warming.
I always like it when people defy President Trump. My news is that people have found that scientists actually get younger when they're up in space.
Completely locked in patients are able to communicate.
A Dutch zoo tries out Tinder for orangutans.
Having an out-of-body experience can actually make you less afraid of death.
And if you hate the sound of people chewing, you can blame your brain.
So, kicking off with our new news format, what was my story? That the American national parks are defying President Trump on Twitter. So when Trump took office, he deleted nearly all references to climate change on the White House website and silenced the US's Environment Protection Agency, banning their staff from using its social media accounts. But many American national parks, led by Badlands, which is just the coolest name for a national park to have been tweeting climate change facts that undermine his position. The posts were widely shared under the hashtag resist, but have all been removed a few days later. However, alternative Twitter accounts such as Alt-US National Park Service and Alt-NASA have sprung up to continue their work. I think this is important and interesting because it's terrifying that Trump can silence environmental media just because he doesn't agree with it. It's really 1984. And also, it's terrifying that the leader of the United States denies climate change exists. Mm. And I chose this story because I just think it's really important that we keep sharing the truth about climate change.
Yes, it's really important. It's essential. So yeah, my first story was about people who have locked-in syndrome. So people who are completely locked in, so they can't even move their eyes to answer questions, which some people can do. So we've now been able to use a brain-computer interface to sort of read the thoughts of patients, so they can answer yes or no questions. So that's pretty amazing, and it's really important, I think, because apart from giving families the sort of peace of mind of being able to communicate and ask their family if they're okay, if they're happy, you can also have more practical things, sort of, are you hungry, thirsty, are you uncomfortable, are you in pain? And yeah, I think we're all a little bit terrified of something like this happening to us. So it's nice to know that maybe you wouldn't be completely locked out forever.
I heard this on the Radio 4 Today programme, and they included a hilarious anecdote saying not everyone is happy with this new technology. Essentially, one girl's boyfriend, her father had locked-in syndrome, and he asked for permission to marry her. And with this new technology, the answer was no, repeatedly no. Claire, what was your story?
So a scientist tested a pair of twins, one of whom's an astronaut and one of whom isn't, and they looked at the telomere, which is a bit of the cell that gets shorter as you get older. What they expected was that the astronaut's telomere would shorten at a greater rate than the twins, but it was actually the other way around, which is really cool. I think this is really important because I hope eventually humanity is going to go to space, preferably before President Trump destroys the environment. And I think it's really important that we know what life is going to be like up there.
Yeah, and I guess maybe it'll be the new anti-aging fad. Go to space and live longer. My second story, which I chose just because it made me laugh and also it kind of depressed me immensely. So this is the story that the Appenkel Primate Park in Holland hopes to increase the breeding chances of an 11-year-old female orangutan by seeing if she would choose a preferred mate on a touchscreen before they are introduced in real life. This research is part of a broader program looking at emotions in animals. Why is it important? It's not, you know, groundbreakingly important. But at the moment, their orangutan breeding program is struggling and orangutans are endangered. So they're trying anything they can to improve the chances that she's going to like the male that they kind of introduced to her. And sometimes these males have to travel really far, like they might come all the way from Singapore, so they don't want to waste a journey. But like I said, I think asking an animal to just choose from pictures, I mean, smell is really important for, even for us, like humans, smell is really important. We just don't really talk about it. And I kind of think it's crazy anthropomorphism that they are literally giving her a tablet. They're having to reinforce it with steel because she breaks it. And they are they're like giving her options of pictures of orangutan.
That is so brilliant.
It's like OK Cupid for orangutans.
No, it is more like Tinder because there's no bio.
Oh, oh God, no, that's worse than OK Cupid.
Very much just a picture.
Oh, wow. Brilliant.
Yaz, your second story.
Oh, yeah. So this is another sort of brain scan story. So some people experience when they hear people chewing, breathing, drinking, not just a minor annoyance, but a literal body just shake of anger. And I don't have this, and it's called misophonia. So people actually aren't being oversensitive. Some people's brains are structurally different, and it's able to be detected on MRI when they're looking at people eating or drinking or hearing it. It's honestly very difficult for them to deal with. So people aren't being oversensitive. So I think that's quite important that we recognise that some people genuinely find it awful. And I don't think I have it, but it is a little bit important to me because I think I might have it a bit.
You can identify.
Yeah, and it's funny because I can really relate to that just a full body irritating sensation, but it's strange because the closer in relationship that somebody is to me, the more annoying it is. So for example, it is unbearable if my brother is eating or drinking near me.
And that's what siblings are for.
It's so unfair because no one's doing anything wrong, but I'm just furious.
Interesting.
And in the spirit of the show, yeah, we should be trying to understand how others perceive
exactly,
the world.
Exactly.
Even when we don't perceive it in the same way. And Claire, your second story.
So a few years ago, someone invented a multi-sensory illusion called the out-of-body illusion, which basically involves sticking on a virtual reality headset and then you're shown a figure which does the things that you do in real time. And that's pretty cool all by itself, so you can, you know, see what you look like from the outside, effectively. But recently, the scientists involved with it have also been testing, like, what other consequences does it have? And one of the things we know about near-death experiences is that people tend to have an out-of-body experience during that. So it
yeah.
seems like you become distant from your real self. And what they found was that people become less scared of death if they have this virtual reality out-of-body experience. And I think that's really cool. Like, quite a lot of people are scared of death. It'd be pretty good if we could, like, lessen that.
That is amazing.
Wow. It'd be really weird to like try and like pre-experience
yeah.
your death. about that. Why was that kind of important to you?
Well, it's partly because it's one of the applications of my other bit of research, which is multisensory perception in the general population. So I thought I'd just sneak that in there.
Great. Well, let's have your fifth song and we'll come on to that next.
Okay. I've picked Younger by Sonobo C because her voice looks really beautiful.
Why we fight to get on love, and I've been wondering how your mind will leave you hanging, your heart lingering. Stay lost and found by whoever stays around, forgetting there is a way to be yourself, I assure you this. There's a way to catch your dreams without falling asleep. You might as well get it while you can, babe, cause you know you ain't getting.
In a piano lesson, artist Vincent van Gogh's teacher realised he was associating the different notes with specific colours. Unfortunately for Van Gogh, the teacher took this as a sign of insanity and forced him to leave.
Poor Van Gogh.
Yeah.
Someone experiencing one of the negative sides of synesthesia.
Exactly.
Taken for mad. I just want to say I literally love that last song that you picked.
It's wonderful, isn't it? I really like how her voice looks. It's kind of... looks like someone's dipped a big paintbrush in acrylic paint and then like done a big smear across a piece of paper, except there are like holes in the... So it's
wow.
Like, yeah, it's lovely. Also, I really love a good Screw You Society song, which, yeah ticks a lot of boxes for me.
Now, you mentioned just before that you also study cross-modal perception.
Yeah.
What is that?
Okay, so we've been talking largely about synesthesia, which not many people have. So, you know, we're talking about rates of like 4%, maybe 10% with some of the more common ones. But cross-modal correspondence is something that everyone does. So... for example, if I tell you I've got a large object and a small object and one of them makes a high-pitched noise, you will typically say that it's the small object that's making the high-pitched noise. Some people disagree, but
yeah,
almost
even
almost
in the drawing
does.
We did for the song earlier,
yeah.
My representation of the bass was a much bigger shape than my representation of like the higher-pitched stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So everyone has sort of some cross-modal stuff like this, so different senses working together. We're not really clear on whether... like synesthesia in this more typical cross-modal stuff are like two ends of a continuum, or if they're two completely different things. But we do know that people can have both, which is cool.
And how kind of like how unanimous across the world are these associations? Are they quite language orientated?
Some of them are, some of them aren't. So something like the Geeky Booba effect, which is
what is the Geeky Booba effect?
It's really
what
fun.
A great name.
It's fantastic. So it's what you do is you show people two objects, one of which is sort of spiky and one of which is blobby, and you go, one of these is called Geeky and one of these is called Booba, which is which? And most people say that the round object is called Booba. Everyone's nodding. This is good. And the spiky shape is called Geeky.
Yeah.
So we see this, as far as I know, across every culture that's been tested. So even looking at sort of remote cultures that don't have like much contact with the outside world, we also see it in children who haven't learned to speak yet. They'll like point at, if you say which one is Geeky, they'll point at, you know, the shape that they think it is. So it's obviously not entirely to do with language, but
there's some sort of association. We're all with that hard sound, with the kind of spiky shape.
Exactly. So the current hypothesis is it's something to do with the shape your mouth makes as you're making the noise. So E is quite a it involves a much smaller shape with your mouth than oo. So
maybe it's going back to what you kind of mentioned earlier about like your sense of your body.
Yep.
And maybe it's the sense of our body and just, creating a perception for us.
Yep, exactly.
Ah, amazing.
Yeah.
When I first heard about this, there was a guy who had created a new kind of cross-modal perception for himself. He was born with a condition where he couldn't see colours. He could only see in black and white.
Mm-hmm.
And so he engineered that a camera would sort of send signals to his brain and meant that everything that he saw, the camera converted into noises, so yep. he'd hear in colours.
Yep, exactly. You can also use something like that, which those are called sensory substitution devices, so you're translating from one sense to another. You can also use them if you've completely lost a sense. So, for example, there's one called the VOICE, or voice, which converts webcam images entirely into soundscapes, and you can use it if you're blind. So it's just like you're going around with like a webcam mounted on a pair of sunglasses, and then you know, your phone is converting these things into soundscapes. And a lot of people say that it's really helpful for sort of navigating and like interacting with the world, but B, if they're people who haven't been blind their whole lives, it can not restore their sight, but you can start having experiences that are like sight. So you sort of automatically convert the sound into like a mental image that you can use to sort of navigate, rather than navigating using the soundscape per se.
And your research into cross-modal perception, did you say that this is like playing into these kind of devices?
Yeah, so recently I've been looking at how different cross-modal correspondences might interact. So as I said earlier, if you've got something small and something large, small goes with high-pitched. You can also look at things like how luminant an object is, so like how much light it's giving off, and typically lighter things tend to go with higher pitches. So one of the experiments we did was what happens if you've got conflicting information. So you've got something large but light in colour, like do you tend to think it makes a high-pitched noise or a low-pitched noise? And what we found was actually people choose roughly at random when they're faced with sort of equal weights on either side. But once you start getting more weight on one side of the thing, so more things that say, yes, this should be a high-pitched noise, you get more and more likely to make that decision. So it works pretty much like we expected it would, but it's nice to have that confirmed because you can use it to like build these sensory substitution devices more efficiently.
More, yeah, and so that they're not getting too much interference.
Yep, exactly.
What's been like your most kind of surprising finding working in this field?
What a question. Do you know, I don't think I have found anything particularly surprising. I've been quite lucky. One thing in the multiple cross-modal correspondences one that I was talking about, it doesn't always add up. Like sometimes people seem to treat different sensory dimensions as though they're like one big sensory dimension. So if you vary information about how light something is and how saturated it is, so like how intense the colour is, people seem to get confused between the two of them and treat them as though they're one thing, which is pretty interesting. We're not really sure why they do that, but we do see something like that in other experiments, so it's going to be something I'll be investigating in the future. Great. With my scary science fingers that I now realise I'm doing.
Been waving in the studio.
Cheese grommet kind of fingers.
We are coming to the end of our show, and so it is time for Yaz to put us out of our misery.
Okay.
And reveal the brain teaser. Have we had any guesses?
We have. I don't think Scott Jones maybe understood the question, because his suggestion is Ghostbusters 2. someone else has suggested,
ooh. So I was thinking that my best guess was that it was like, a five-letter A.
To be fair, that does also work. But the answer to this one is empty, and it's a little bit of a play, because the letters M and T
are the same, the same as the
and
whole
you move
word.
The, take the P out, and it all still works nicely together.
Nice. So I love it.
Yeah, none of you got it this time. Better luck next time.
And finally, we've been asking in the studio and on Twitter, what if you could have one form of synesthesia, what would you choose to have? So, Sophie, I'm going to come to you first.
Sound to colour, 100%. Unless it was people eating noisily on the train, in which case, no.
Max?
I reckon it would be quite fun to be able to hear tastes.
Yeah. You eat chocolate traditional. And, like, you hear a beautiful melody or something.
Somewhere.
Nice. Wow, yeah. Yaz, what have you gone for?
I think it would be good to be able to sort of taste sounds or names, like you said. But I guess I could also go very wrong, but that would be a nice way to sort of experience the world, wouldn't it?
Mm. Yeah, so like you, I think it's my favourite one and I'd want to experience it for a day. Mm. But to have one for always, I'm with Soph, and I'd want to have music turn into colours for me.
Good choice. Yeah. Strongly agree.
And Claire, could you tell us your final song?
I've picked Sticks and Stones by Jamie T because it's a wonderful song about being a teenage dirtbag with an anxiety disorder. And I guess, again, this comes back to academics and people too. There's a lot of anxiety in academia, especially around like...
A lot of pressure, isn't there?
Yeah, and you're on short-term contracts for quite a long time. And then, like, you know, you might, if you're lucky, eventually get a permanent contract. But it can be a really anxious time and people don't talk about it much. So I really appreciate how open Jamie T is about experiencing anxiety. So I look up to him for that.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been
thank
absolutely
you for
fascinating.
Me.
I'm literally going to go around being like, what shape do I see in the next song? So thank you.
And thank you.
Goodbye. The fight, boys like him don't shine so bright. Soon as I see the dust settle, he's out on the town trying to find trouble. When there's no one left to fight, boys like him don't shine so bright. Soon as I see the dust settle, he's out on the town trying to find trouble. I took a train again away from shame and blame, a city pain to see a friend I hadn't seen since I was drinking underage. I was a 10 a day, how'd you say? Little shit, white lightning, heightening on my courage, quick wit. We were chicken season wallabies, button shirts and whiskey. Martin just as like my final bounce, like a jam, 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 jam. I don't know who I am, he said I don't know if I can. I said yeah, and you can't. For more Science Mixtape, you can find our shows on Audioboom, iTunes, or any other podcast provider. Or join us live every Saturday at 10 a.m. on Soho Radio, recently voted the best online radio station in the world.